Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Tinseltown Tragedies Uncut. This particular episode contains an uncut interview whose portions were included in the Who Killed Krista Helm episode of the series. Tonight's guest is Darlene Thorason, a woman that befriended Krista Helm as a teenager, and that friendship endured until Krista's murder in 1977. That murder remains unsolved, but Darlene does offer a few chilling tidbits that could provide clues as to who actually killed her. You can hear the episode Who Killed Krista Helm in its entirety at our website at moviegeeksunited.net.
So I guess the first thing I'd like to know is how you first met Krista. I mean, she was, you knew her as Sandy back then, right?
Right. Her name was Sandy Wolfile then. And I met her, when we were teenagers. We were both 15 years old. So that was way back in 1963. And we both lived in the same neighborhood and kind of hung out with the same crowd. So that's basically how I met her. And then her and I were kind of alike. And we started hanging around together and really became best friends at the time.
So you say you guys were alike. What drew you to her? What clicked between the two of you?
Well, she liked to have a lot of fun. She was outgoing. I don't want to say she had a high opinion of herself, but it was more like a self-confidence that she carried. And popular and very pretty. And so we were just drawn to each other.
Yeah. Was there, was it evident that she saw, what kind of future did she see for herself at that young age?
I don't think she had predicted what her future would be just then. It was typical at that time to just want to get married and, you know, perhaps have a husband and children. So she really didn't, you know, voice anything about being a star or anything when I first met her. It wasn't until later on when she moved away from the Milwaukee area that, you know, these things came into, you know, her plans for the future.
Yeah. And what was Milwaukee life like growing up?
Well, Midwest life was, you know, it was fun. It was in the 60s. We had a great childhood, great teenage years. We had a lot of fun. We had stable home life and came from loving parents. And it was, to me, it was the best time of my life.
Yeah. Well, mine too. I wish I could go back to those years myself. When you think about her and you think about those early years growing up together, are there most cherished memories for you?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, her and I became very close, and so we shared a lot of things and a lot of what I like to call our little escapades. We did a lot of things with, you know, guys and the typical teenage thing.
Yeah. And did you, after high school, did... How did your friendship with her progress?
Well, Sandy actually lived with her mother. Her parents were divorced. And when I met her, she was living with her mother. And so she moved away from my neighborhood and she began to live with her father. We still were very close. And in fact, I met my husband when she moved to a different area of town. And so after high school, we still were very close. In fact, she stood up for my wedding and we both had little girls at the same time. And then she had Nicole that she went on and started traveling. She got the itch to travel. Although I will backtrack a little bit there. She did have a relationship with Nicole's father before that, and she was very young at the time when she had Nicole.
Yeah, I think she was something around 19 or so.
Right. And
Yeah.
at that time it just wasn't acceptable not to be married, and so she married Gary Clements. I think it was more like her father made her marry him, but that's what happened then.
Was she, I mean, because all of what I've read about her and the stories that I've heard of her, she definitely seemed like a free spirit, very determined. Where do you think that came from in her?
Well, definitely she was definitely a free spirit and very determined to get what she wants. In fact, when we were teenagers, her and I had a saying, fair in love and war, and that meant that nothing was off base. No guys, no girls. I mean, it may sound crude at this time, and being the age that I am, I look back and I think that, we had really high opinions of ourselves, and it was like nothing was going to stand in her way. She was going to get what she wanted, and she didn't care whose toe she stepped on to get it.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking in a bad way at all about her. It was just the way that things were.
Well, it's also part of being young and ambitious, and
Correct.
I think we all can
And
relate
she,
to that kind of, yeah.
right, and she had a real beauty going for her. She was a beautiful, beautiful young lady.
I mean, did she do any modeling around Milwaukee? When did her kind of goals start to formulate?
Well, she didn't do any. I don't think it was like professional model. She was found that she had left Milwaukee for a while and went to Chicago. I was not aware of that at the time, and I believe she did some modeling there. She also did something with the Playboy Club, of which I'm not certain either at this time what exactly it was. If she was a Playboy bunny or a model, I don't know.
Yeah. Did you I mean it all happens. I have childhood friends that life happens, and like you said, you get married, and you kind of, the friendship is always there, but life sends you on different paths, and you kind of drift. Did you keep up regular contact at all with her after you married and after she had Nicole? And
I did. And in fact, a couple times she did come back to Milwaukee. One time she came back for a class reunion, and she actually rented a limo for her and I. And I mean, it was like, to me, a girl from the Midwest, this was like a movie star coming to town. And everybody in our class knew it too. And she took full advantage of that. She loved it. She loved the attention too. But to me, she was very, very generous to me. She was a very generous friend. And another time that comes to mind, sometime after that, was around Christmas time. I think she had come back to Milwaukee, and she bought me a round trip ticket, that my Christmas present, to join her while she was living in New York.
oh, wow. So did you take advantage of that?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And well, it was something that was like, unbelievable to me. And then I got to see her lifestyle, how she lived, and the things that she had, and it was mind-blowing to me.
I've been to big city. I actually live in Florida. So, and when I remember the first time that I visited New York, and it was quite a overpowering experience. But if you mentioned the kind of the lifestyle that she led, and you stayed with her some time there, what kind of observations did you make about how she was getting along in New York?
Well, it appeared that she was doing very, very well. She lived a very wealthy, wealthy lifestyle. Her apartment in New York was, like I said, it was just kind of unbelievable for me. She had lots and lots of gowns and furs and jewelry. And, you know, I guess at that time I questioned her, you know, how did you get all this, you know? And, you know, then I'm sure we'll get to the diary a little later, but that's when I found out that she was keeping this diary, which actually is a throwback to when we were teenagers. We kept a book, and it was called Our Personal Boy List. And it was kind of like an accomplishment type of thing, you know, guys that we went out with or, you know, dated. And she joked when I was in New York with her that this was her personal boy list.
So was it, because I've heard different accounts of this, was it a diary or was it more kind of like a name and address book?
It was a listing. And,
okay.
You know, I've been asked that question by the detectives that I talked to, and it was more like a listing, like kind of like a rating system. Yeah.
I mean, this is fascinating, but did you recognize names on her list?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, these were some heavy hitters at the time.
Yeah. So she really, I mean, she had to have been, obviously she was very beautiful and determined, but there had to have been she had to have had kind of like a very open, welcoming personality too, because she attracted a lot of attention. People were drawn to her.
That's right. And, you know, I think that, you know, part of it was a lot of people, I think men and women, were partially jealous of her because of how well she did. And she was not a stupid girl either. She was not a stupid girl, and she knew what she had, and she used it. She used it to her advantage to get things that she wanted.
Yeah. Do you think she was ever in love?
I believe she was in love. I believe she was in love when we were younger, and I can't say whether any of those relationships that she developed later on, she, you know, had love with them. I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Which is sad, but she was a young girl. I mean, she really hadn't lived life at all.
Right, and also she's at a certain point. She wants to try to make it in the entertainment industry any way she can, and you know that industry is kind of it's cutthroat for everyone. I mean, it's all about the contacts, no matter who you are in that world.
Of course. And even back then, it was different from the way it is today. I know nothing of how it works, but I do know that. She made money, you know, doing, you know, by investing, and you know that was part of it too. She did make money with Godspell, but you know, as to where all of her fortunes came, I can't say.
Yeah, well, it's part of the story is pretty sensitive too, because I mean I understand her drive. But you know, there's a lot of people out there that say, yeah, but she had a daughter, and her daughter was staying with her mother for a brief time, I know, and then I think her grandmother after that. But
her mother never stayed with her daughter.
Okay.
Sandy and her mother did not get along, so it wasn't with her mother that Nicole stayed. Did stay with perhaps her father, Sandy's father, Harry, and maybe the stepmother for a while Sandy did things, but never her mother. And
okay.
I know that. Yeah.
So what do you say to people that kind of cut?
What I was going to say is that, you know, a lot of people thought that, yeah, you know, it was terrible. Here she's got this little girl and she's off doing whatever she wants. And she always, well, I think that she provided for Nicole in a monetary way. And it wasn't that she was there so much, you know, in her life, but in a monetary way, making sure that she was taken care of. And then when, you know, she went to live with this nanny in Vermont, you know, she was taken care of. But yet, maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself here, but Sandy did tell me that if anything ever happened to her, that I was to take Nicole. And she said that on more than one occasion.
Mm. When she moved to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and shortly before her death, she mentioned that again. So
wow.
I don't know if it was like a premonition type thing. And, you know, once again, I may be, you know, jumping ahead in the story, but, you know, she did contact me right before her death. So.
Well, I'm definitely going to get to that because I want to know about, but are you in contact with Nicole? Have you been in recent years at all?
Oh yeah, Nicole and I are in contact. We're on, you know, we're on Facebook together, and so we have been in contact, and we were both, you know, involved in the 48-hour thing. So we always talk, and I sent Nicole a lot of things that I had of Sandy's because I thought that she should have them. Especially as I grow older, I wanted her to have the pictures and the mementos of things that I had for so many years.
Do you know anything about her sister? Because she had a sister that was actually in LA at the time that she moved there too.
Yes, Marisa. Marisa, her little sister. Yeah. Well, of course, I knew Marisa well as, you know, when she was just a little girl. She was so much younger than Sandy. But Marisa was always kind of a tag-along, and she always looked up to, I think, both Sandy and myself. Later on, I think it became apparent that Marisa really wanted the spotlight. At least that's how I feel, that she wanted the spotlight and that, you know, she was in a way jealous of her own sister.
Mm. But so they weren't necessarily close?
Oh, I think they were close, and I think that, you know, as they were younger, before Sandy, you know, got so popular, and that, you know, Sandy was protective of her, and, you know, Marisa looked up to her, and I think Marisa wanted to be like her.
Mm-hmm. So when she moved to L.A., I guess you guys still stayed in contact, and she kept you updated about the progression of her career along the way?
Right, right. And once again, you know, she paid my way to go out there, and I did stay with her in L.A. also.
Well, tell me about the L.A. trip.
Well, once again, for someone like me from the Midwest, it was, like, unbelievable. I mean... she took me to a Hollywood party, and it's just something that I couldn't even fathom at the time. At that time, I thought that her and I, the difference between us, you know, it was apparent that what she wanted out of life and what I wanted, I felt like a fish out of water, so to speak. But like I said, she always remained, and she was always very good to me. There was not a thing that she wouldn't buy for me or give to me.
Yeah. Well, did you feel that she was being reckless at all, or did you think that it was all kind of benign?
I did not feel that she was reckless because I thought that she had everything under control. I really did. You know, it was even before the you know, the AIDS epidemic or any of that, where you would probably give second thought to you know, a lifestyle like that. But I really thought she had it all under control. I thought she had a business head as well as the beauty in the brains and shared connections.
Yeah. Were you able to meet any of her famous friends when you went to L.A.?
Yeah, yeah. So, I met them. And it was like she never had a serious, she told me that she never had a serious relationship, that what she kind of considered a serious relationship, because I would say, well, is he your boyfriend or, you know, do you date him or what? It wasn't like that.
Yeah. Well, you said that she mentioned that she wanted you to take care of Nicole if anything should happen to her. In the last correspondence that she sent to you, what was that last correspondence exactly?
Actually, she had sent me a card, and she said, "Dar, I'm in over my head. I'm into some things that I can't get out of." Those were her words, and she said, if anything happens to me, or she had also said that if I didn't hear from her for a while, not to be, you know, alarmed. And she said, but I have to go into hiding. And she said, if something would happen to me, you'd take care of Nicole. And for many, many, many years, I thought that she was under the witness protection plan. I honestly thought that. I thought that she had made it out of there and that, you know, she knew she was in trouble and she was alive. And it wasn't until I talked to the detectives after the 48-hour show that I told them then. They kind of like, well, I know what they said to me. They said, we can assure you she is not alive. And
wow.
It kind of just, because that's what kept me going. All I thought she was smart enough. I thought she went into hiding.
So you had no idea when she was murdered?
I did not. And that's, this is where all the mystery starts into being. Because for as close as her and I were, I did not know of the day when she was murdered. I heard it like 2 weeks later. Some friend of mine had gotten hold of a tabloid magazine and called me and told me. And I said, no, that's not true. It's just not true. And I said, I would have known. And, you know, I said, it's not true. I said, you know how they print that stuff. So what I did was I called father and, Darlene, it is true. And I just went ballistic. I just went nuts. I went over to his house. And I was screaming, and I was like, why didn't anybody tell me? And when I think back of this now, it was so odd, so very, very odd that it was so hushed up.
Mm.
It was like everybody was afraid to talk. And, you know, like it wasn't until even recently, very recently, I'd say within the last 6 months, that Nicole and I were talking about how her mother is buried here in Milwaukee. And I don't know if Nicole didn't know that or, you know, that it just wasn't brought up at the time, that she had never been to her mother's grave here in Milwaukee. And I thought, how did this all take place? A funeral? And they said, no, there was no funeral for her. And I did not even believe her father. And her father went up in his dresser drawer and brought out the death certificate to show me. But I still didn't believe it. I still did not believe it.
When you received that last card,
did
the message on it seem to come out of nowhere? Did it make any sense at all to you?
It did. It made sense. It wasn't like an ominous thing. Like it was just, you know, I mean, I'm over my head. I'm into some things and, you know, short like that.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine a couple of weeks after her death when you find that out from her father, I can't imagine how you must have driven yourself crazy trying to figure out exactly what that card meant.
Oh, of course, of course. And, you know, especially when I found out, you know, how she had died, you know, it was just like, I just, I could not believe it, and I thought, something is not right here.
Yeah. But you got no sense when you were, how long before her death were you visiting her in L.A.?
Oh, I don't want to even venture a guess on that. I want to say maybe a year before or 9 months, something like that.
Yeah, but it seemed like things were going well for her there, and you didn't sense any tension at all in her life then?
No, nothing.
Yeah.
No, the only thing that if I sense that her and her sister had kind of falling out. They were still close and everything, but I could sense, you know, a real tension between them.
So when you consider the reaction of her father, and you know, I guess her community of people back home, do you just feel like they felt so separate from her and the life that she was leading that they just couldn't deal with her death, or what was that reaction about, do you think?
No, I didn't take it like that. I thought that they were all hiding something. I really did, and I loved her father. Her father was a great, gentle man, but I know that he had some connections in Milwaukee, and, you know, there was talk, too, that, you know, it was mafia-related, and No, I didn't. Getting back to your original question, I didn't think that at all. I just thought the whole thing was very, very strange.
Well, I've heard this that there were, and a lot of it could be coincidence, and some of it could not be. But I've heard that there was a mob presence throughout various stages of her life.
Correct.
That is correct, huh?
Correct. I would say yes, that is correct. Getting back to her husband, Gary Clemens, I think that he was somehow related to the mob here in Milwaukee. He owned a karate studio in downtown Milwaukee at the time, and it just seemed like he was into something. And also the fact that shortly after Sandy died, he mysteriously.
Huh.
That was very weird, very odd.
How did he pass away, do you know?
Well, the story that I got was that his car went over a cliff in a southern state somewhere.
You know, what also makes this such a complicated case, a complicated story, is that she knew so many people from, and she associated with so many people from the highest rollers to, you know, apparently real kind of scum, you know, dangerous people in L.A.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, you, after all these decades have passed since her death, has anything become clearer for you about, you know, the mystery surrounding her murder?
I have my own feelings on all of this. And, you know, the TV show, what other people think. I still have my own feelings on it. I think that she was in too deep and she got scared. And, you know, yes, she ran into some unscrupulous people, of course. But then again, you know, it was brought to light that, you know, she had been, you know, sleeping or whatever with some of these high, you know, profile people, movie stars and such. And my own feelings are, at this time, I think that, I believe that the way she was murdered was definitely a crime of passion. My point, you know, they say that it usually with that kind of a crime and the way it was done, that it was a female. And I kind of believe that. I believe that it may have been a female. But yet, Sandy wasn't a small girl. She, you know, and I believe that she could hold her own. But once again, if somebody is coming at you, you know, holistically with a knife in their hand, I don't know what chance that she would have. But then again, my other thing is that did somebody, one of the people that she was involved with, whether, you know, supposedly romantically or whatever, actually send out a hitman to get her? My thoughts at first were, of course, with the Thelminial connection, because it was so similar to the way he had died, and like a year after he had died, that this happened. And so I thought for sure at first that that was something. But then, you know, they say that she obviously knew the person that came after her and attacked her. And so, you know, I was thinking about this within the last couple of days when we were, you know, deciding to do this show, and I was thinking, I think the detectives know who did it. I just have a feeling. And most of the people involved at that time are deceased, that she was involved with, or, you know, that I knew are deceased. However, there are some high-profile people that are still alive. And, you know, whether this was, you know, someone was paid to shove it under the carpet, so to speak, you know, these are all questions in my mind. My hope is that I find out who Borigo.
I'm telling you, I'm doing this series, I mean, and reading her story and doing the stories about people like the Black Dahlia and so many mm-hmm. figures throughout entertainment. That's one of the incredibly frustrating things about it, is because it's almost like you want trying to know the unknowable, and yet you know that the answer is right there. And it just, my gosh, it just drives you insane.
Yes, yes. And I'm thinking it's something, you know, it's like, that's, you hit it on the head. It's like, it's got to be right here. It's got to be.
Yeah. And I mean, I hate to bring this up because it's so horrible, but it's an important point that you made, that this was a personal murder, because, I mean, it could absolutely not have been a mugging or anything, because the nature of the crime, it almost seemed like whoever did it wanted to defile her.
Deface her.
Yes.
Deface her beauty and, you know, leave her laying there, you know, just brutally slain in the street. You know, it wasn't just like somebody went up with a gun and shot her once, but to stab her, you know, numerous times. You know, that's what, you know, they always say it was crime of passion. So I'm positive that it was somebody that knew her. It wasn't just like the mugging.
Well, you know, so many of these stories, I mean, the crimes themselves are very operatic and over the top and sensationalized and that kind of thing. So, unfortunately, a lot of times these victims, when you don't get to know them as humans, you just remember how they were taken from us. So
exactly.
Beyond that, I want to know what you want people to know about Krista, your friend.
I want people to know that she was a beautiful person, a beautiful and a smart person, and she had a lot of life ahead of her. And to me, she was always my true friend. She was a giving person. She wasn't selfish. To the people, I think that the people that were her friends, and I don't think she had a lot of true friends. I think that she was used a lot. But I believe that, you know, if you were her friend, she did all right by you. But, you know, do her wrong and, you know, she could step on you.
Well, she was, I mean, one of the questions I asked of, I forget, either Stephen or John, I asked, you know, was she very assertive? I mean, what did she have, kind of a self-empowerment to her that kind of let people know that she wasn't vulnerable. Was she vulnerable or was she assertive? What was her personality like in that respect?
She was definitely assertive. I think that she may have used that too. You know, like if you do this to me, I'll use this against you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well,
most of the information that I gave to John's time writing this book, and so I actually wrote out pages and pages of longhand from the time when we were 15. You know, I could have written a book on it, and then I turned over my information to John. So I don't know whether his book will ever come to be or not, but I would like, you know, actually in November, this woman would have been 65 years old, and I still think her like a 23-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and I hate it when people talk ill of the sensationalism that people do after a person is gone. And I don't believe that I ever have done that. I never did that because she was my friend.
And that's exactly why I wanted to talk to you, because I wanted to get a portrait of who she was as a friend and as a person, because there's so many, you know, for lack of a better word, I mean, there's so much kind of sexy aspects of this case because it involves Hollywood and stars and all this kind of stuff. And I think a lot of that might just be a big smokescreen just to lure people in. And I mean, I wanted people to know what we lost when we lost her as a person.
Correct. And,
yeah.
You know, like she had a lot of life ahead of her. And, you know, I think, once again, I think that a lot of other women maybe in Hollywood were jealous of her because she did come on the scene so fast, so to speak. You know, she basically came out of nowhere from Milwaukee, Wisconsin to out there, you know, where she was, you know, hanging around with the big, high-profile people.
Well, she had to be assertive. I mean, because that's from Milwaukee to L.A., that's a completely different world.
You just don't pick up your bags and say, hey, you know, this is where I'm going and I'm going to be a movie star. You know, she, like I said, she knew what she wanted.